This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Woo! Yeah, let's do it. It's a battle today on Fantasy Football Today. I'm picking on Heath's rankings. I've got five questions about Heath's rankings. Yo, what's up with that, Heath? Why are you ranking Drake London ahead of Chase Brown? Why are you ranking Amon-Ra St. Brown ahead of Puka Nacua? And the best part is we've got Twitter polls to back it up. We'll see who the people like. I don't even know the results. I don't know if they're going to be on Team Adam.
You know the results.
I mean, I know they're going to pick Puka. I think they're going to pick London. They're definitely going to pick Josh Allen over Luther Burden. I think they're going to pick Tyler Shuck over Bo Nix, which is not my stance.
I didn't do a Twitter poll this morning, but I did try to promote the show a little bit and tweet that this. Like, I don't know that we've ever planned out a show more likely to go off the rails. Well, that Nando wasn't coming on as a guest.
Or Dan. Wait, why do you think this one's going to be? Why do you think it's going off the rails?
Well, we've got angry Adam Azer after his Knicks lost game 3.
That's okay.
And it's just you and me, and you're setting it up intentionally as, like, I'm going to attack Heath's rankings, which is just, like, conflict.
Yeah.
And then you chose, like, three of the guys you chose are within, like, four places in my rankings in my overall top 200. So it's, like, guys that I have right next to each other. So I'm going to get really angry about that also.
Well, okay. So I think the one name that stands out the most in your rank, well, actually there's a few. The one where I think the rankings are just wacky are Zay Flowers. You have him super high. Mike Evans, you have like 305th or something, or like,
yes,
like 95th.
Right. 95th. Yeah.
And I feel like we talk about them every day. So
right. Yeah.
I did want to have some
just for the point. And I guess we could make this the YouTube poll. Because Adam clearly would rather have Mike Evans than Zay Flowers.
No.
So Mike Evans or Zay Flowers, and we'll see. Maybe I'll win one poll today.
No, I would rather have Zay Flowers than Mike Evans, but I don't think they should be.
Like. Not what it sounded like to me.
They shouldn't be 70 spots apart in your rankings or whatever.
They're not 70 spots. They're probably 60 spots.
Anyway, so we have five kind of disputes, and a couple of them are high stakes. A couple of them are high stakes. Early round one, late round one, or early round two. I like it. I'm excited. We do have some news and notes as well. Let's get to that. By the way, I have to. So remember last week I said the Knicks would be the biggest underdog ever if they won the finals. Uh-huh. So it was actually, I misinterpreted. It's based, and I don't know why I'm even talking about this. I felt bad in case you were at the water cooler telling all your friends at work this, that. It was based on their odds entering the playoffs, not entering the finals.
So. That makes much more. I think we actually said or speculated that that was the case.
Yeah.
And I think there's a very, very low risk that people are taking things they heard you say and telling them as facts outside in the outside world.
That is my goal. I don't think people know that. I have a water cooler goal. I have a water cooler goal that we're going to give some stats on the show that are so, so interesting that you're going to go to your water cooler, you know, at work and be like, hey, did you know that Jared Goff over the last 4 years leads the NFL in passing yards and passing touchdowns? And he's got 1,200 more passing yards than number two on the list, Patrick Mahomes.
I think you need it to be shorter. Like, the problem with a lot of your stats is somebody has to go to the water cooler and, you know, did you know if you remove weeks 3, 7, and 12 and only count the games where his top two wide receivers play, that Jared Goff averaged 400 fantasy points per game?
I would say that, but
yeah, that sounds exactly right.
Yeah, but that's more like at the coffee machine, right? You guys like 5 minutes to kill. But no, did you know that Jared Goff over the last 4 years leads the NFL in passing yards and passing touchdowns, but he's ninth best in fantasy points per game? So that's water cooler stuff. All right, news and notes. Cameron Wolf of NFL Network thinks that the Panthers, we had a different report on Jonathan Brooks, that the Panthers kind of want to see him ramp up and maybe take more work later in the year. This is Cameron Wolf of NFL Network. He went on the air and he said the Panthers could make the Jonathan Brooks their lead back if he's healthy, not necessarily in week one. And he said one of the, I thought was interesting, the last thing he said in the clip was that the Panthers could let Rico Dowdle go in the offseason in part because they felt Brooks was ready to be the guy in this backfield. So right now, Heath, we have Chuba Hubbard going 69th overall and Brooks going 111th overall.
Yeah, and I think Chuba Hubbard's another one of those guys that if you were trying to do a good job of choosing rankings to pick on, you could have chosen, because I have him 91st. So I'm into this. I'd much rather draft Jonathan Brooks at his ADP than Chuba Hubbard.
Okay. And Atlanta quarterback coach Alex Van Pelt said the team can't have a real quarterback competition until Michael Penix Jr. is healthy, which could be pretty soon. He's making some good progress and could be cleared for 11-on-11 fairly soon. Arizona, they started their mandatory mini camps. Jacoby Brissett did report. Not exactly sure how much he's going to be doing, but he did report to camp. Cam Scadaboo, the Giants also started their mandatory mini camps. Cam Scadaboo was doing drills in mini camp, so that's a good sign. Legarius Sneed back to the Chiefs, where he prospered. The Chiefs need cornerbacks. They lost Jalen Watson and McDuffie to the Rams. Well, they signed Legarius Sneed, who had two pretty bad years, injury-plagued years with the Tennessee Titans. One year deal worth up to $5 million. And Jacksonville running back Chris Rodriguez should be full go by training camp. He has a foot injury, but doesn't seem serious. Well, Heath, you know, the NBA Finals have been pretty good. Three really good games. I'm not sure if you're aware. The Stanley Cup Finals have been much better. I mean, unbelievably.
I do not believe that.
Unbelievably dramatic.
For me personally, and this is a subjective question, for me personally, I don't think you could construct a hockey match that would be more exciting to me than a basketball game.
That's fine. But my point is, there's a lot going on in the sports world right now. We do have these mini camps. We do have hockey. We do have baseball. We do have basketball. I'm sure people are golfing somewhere. If you want to stay in touch and on top of all of it, watch CBS Sports HQ on the CBS Sports app. It's free. It's 24/7 sports streaming. It's great. CBS Sports HQ. Okay, here we go. I was told to keep that bell at very low volume.
You guys are welcome. He blew out one of my eardrums already this morning. The bell was set at 100. We got it knocked down to like 30.
Yeah, and Thomas reminded me that the last time I used it, everyone in the chat was really pissed. Also, yeah, we got to give Heath some flack for calling it a hockey match. They call them games. They're games.
Well, it's basically just soccer on ice.
Oh, that's an interesting take. Okay, so anyway, back to the football pitch. So let's go. Adam takes on Heath. The first one is Amon-Ra St. Brown ahead of Puka Nacua. What does the Twitter poll say? We'll take a look in a minute. But, you know, the consensus has Puka ahead. Dave and Jamie have Puka ahead. You have St. Brown one spot ahead. But that's a high stakes decision that people would have to make. And I don't really get it because it wasn't even close last year. And St. Brown has never shown the upside that Puka has.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I generally will look at larger samples if we have them. And over the last 3 years, Puka's still been just a little bit better than Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think it's a half of a fantasy point that separates them over the last 3 years. And some people only care about the upside, and maybe Puka has just a little bit more. I don't believe Matthew Stafford is throwing 46 touchdown passes again. And so that makes me kind of question, does Puka actually have the upside of what he scored last year? I think there's some pretty significant regression coming for this pass offense. And St. Brown was better than Puka in 23. Puka was, I think, maybe a half a point better in 24. Last year, Puka was a lot better. But I kind of view them both as very similar in terms of probably going to score right around 19 PPR fantasy points per game. And Dave says this sometimes, you don't want to lose your draft in round one. And I do think that Puka is a bigger risk just because of the potential injury to him, to Matthew Stafford, and because of the up and down nature of Stafford's last few years.
To push back a little bit here, I don't think it's fair to look at the last 3 years with Puka Nacua and Amon-Ra St. Brown, because one of those years was Puka's rookie season, which was the best rookie season in wide receiver history, basically, or up there. But still, he's been even better than that. So like St. Brown had a great rookie season, but it was only the last six games or so. But usually I feel like guys take a big players of this caliber take a big jump in year two. So if you just look at years two and three, I think you probably have a bigger edge for Puka Nacua.
Probably so. I just think like in year two, it was Puka at 18.8 and Amon-Ra St. Brown at 18.7.
Puka
Amon-Ra St. Brown scored 110 more fantasy points because he played all season like he always does.
You're talking about 2024?
Yes.
So Puka started that year playing 32% of the snaps, 57% of the snaps, 35% of the snaps. He basically did not play a normal snap share. You know, I mean, I guess he just had kind of a lower normal snap share.
That was because he was not healthy. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Almost positive. Week one. Yeah, he left with an injury. And then I think he came back and didn't play a full snap share in week eight. And then I'm not sure what happened in week nine, but that was an overtime game. He must have left with an injury, 35% of snaps. After that, in his last eight games where he's playing his normal snaps, Puka Nacua, last eight games of 2024, averaged or on pace for 142 catches, 1,781 yards, only six touchdowns, but 189 targets. I do think that St. Brown, I would pick him to have more touchdowns, but that's the only stat that he would beat Puka Nacua in my opinion. And the thing about St. Brown, and the reason why he doesn't quite measure up to Nacua, he's not a great yards guy. It's not bad, but yards per catch, he's actually been below average in that. Yards per target, what he's fine. But in terms of yards per catch, Puka Nacua is clearly better than him, and Puka has that 1,700-yard upside. St. Brown, what's his career high? 13, 1,400? I'm not even 1,500 maybe?
I was going to guess 14, but it may be 1,500.
1,515. That was in only 16 games. So he does have maybe 1,600 yard upside. But I think when you look at his yards per game, they just don't really compare to Puka's. So unless you're worried about a suspension or something like that, I can't really.
Not just a suspension. Like I think Puka's a slightly higher injury risk.
Yeah, I think
fair. Stafford's a slightly higher injury risk than Goff.
Okay.
And
what about the defense argument? Because I think people would say, well, the Rams defense is about to be so good, they're going to throw a lot less than they did last year. How much does that factor in? And I'm going to have you tell me that after we take this break. So we're going to talk about that. We'll wrap up this discussion with that argument. And also we'll take a look at the Twitter poll and see who the public likes. I'm sure this will be Puka. The other ones will be probably a little more even. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today. The Rams threw the ball a lot last year. They don't always throw the ball that much in the Stafford era, but they're usually at least average 5 years with Stafford. And what do you think about that argument that with Myles Garrett now and all the additions they've made on defense, that they're just not going to have to throw that much?
I think that there is a very good chance that that is the case. I do project Stafford for 30 fewer pass attempts than he had last year, which is 10 fewer targets for Puka Nacua, and 10 fewer targets, as elite as he is at turning targets into fantasy points, is at least one fantasy point per game lower. And then the touchdown regression lowers him another point or two.
I think that both teams have the fear of their defenses being really, really good this year and them throwing less, because we've seen it two straight years with the Lions where they've started the year not really throwing that much, and they've ended the year with a terrible defense because of so many injuries, and then they're throwing 38 times per game. The risk is higher for the Rams. I actually, in all seriousness, you have convinced me for sure that St. Brown is a safer play than Puka Nacua. I do think there is a scenario where St. Brown goes from a 31% target share or whatever to back to like the 26, 27 range where he was 2 years ago, because that was the only year he's played where Jameson Williams and Sam Laporta both played 15 or more games. That to me is the only risk. But even last year, the first 10 games of the year, I think, were both Laporta and Williams were both healthy. St. Brown absolutely dominated targets, 31% target share, dominated red zone, green zone, end zone targets. So the only concern I would have is that they get Laporta more involved. They get Jameson Williams more involved, and maybe it hurts the targets. But he's definitely, I think you've convinced me, he's definitely safer. I'm still going to go Puka, though.
I would say that I think Laporta, if I more think Laporta will be more involved, but it will be at the expense of Jameson Williams.
Okay, let's see the results of the Twitter poll. Puka Nacua, 78.6% Amon-Ra St. Brown, 21.
You're going to go undefeated on the polls today.
No, I don't think so.
I expect.
I think I'm going to lose. I think I'm going to lose the next one, Drake London and Chase Brown, because I like Chase Brown. You have Drake London. I think it was Drake London four spots ahead. Let's take a look. You have London in your overall PPR rankings 10th, and you have Chase Brown 13th, so three spots ahead. All right, go ahead and make the case. Again, high stakes, back into round one. I'm sure you'd love to come away with both of these guys at the turn, but you have London ahead of Brown.
I think this is the one where you more have to make the case, because London, on a per-game basis, has been better each of the last 2 years. Now, it
has
hasn't
he really?
Been by a large amount. It was 16.5 to 15.9, 16.8 to 16.6. Obviously, London was a lot better 3 years ago because Brown wasn't a starting running back. And I think you're going to give the second half samples where Chase Brown has finished the year very well. It was hard to argue against what he did in 2024. I think that the strong finish last year probably had less to do with the fact that everybody got healthy and more to do with the fact that he had 14 catches in two games against the Ravens, who gave up the second most catches to running backs all year last year. And he scored five touchdowns in two games against the Dolphins and the Cardinals.
Yeah. One other thing about those Ravens games, Heath, is that T. Higgins missed both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree. Inflated.
So I think, like, again, with St. Brown and Puka, they're back to back for me. These guys are three spots apart. I think you could make an argument for either one. I feel more confident in London's upside. And I don't think his quarterback situation is going to be worse than it's been throughout his career. And there's a decent chance it's better.
I think I called London a sleeping giant a few days ago or last week or something like that on the podcast. He's actually never finished higher than wide receiver 8 per game. And I just see so much more potential. He was wide receiver 3 per game in the first 9 games of the year, on pace for 113 catches, 1,530 yards, 11 touchdowns on 178 targets. And then he hurt his knee, and he was so bad after the knee injury. And, you know, look, you got the Penix argument. He's only been good with Penix. He hasn't been good with Cousins, but I think the knee injury was a much bigger issue than the quarterback last year. Right. And by the way, the Twitter poll is totally on your side. Drake London, 61%. Chase Brown, 39%. So why am I saying Chase Brown over Drake London after all the things I just said? You know, 2 years ago, 2023 with Chase Brown, he didn't become the starting running back until I think the last 8 games of the season. And from that point on, he was the number 5 running back per game in half PPR, number 3 in full PPR. Last year, he played a lot of it without Joe Burrow. But if we look at the 5 games he played with Burrow and with Higgins, so I'm going to remove those two Ravens games where he caught a bunch of passes and T. Higgins didn't play. He averaged 22.6 PPR fantasy points per game.
Were the Dolphins game and the Cardinals game in there?
Yeah, probably.
And I would assume so.
But
yeah.
So is week one where everyone stunk against the Browns. It's only 5 games, but there's just this sample size of Chase Brown as the starting running back with Joe Burrow, whether you want to do the Higgins games or not, each the last 2 years. We're talking over 20 fantasy points. I think over 21 fantasy points per game. We're talking that good. I don't know who feels safer to me. I think I want to say London feels safer because you know the targets are going to be there. But, the Falcons offense scares me, especially more than the Bengals offense, obviously. So this was a tough one, but I'm going to go with Chase Brown just because London has done it in spurts. He's never done it for a full season. And then you have Brown, who just seemed to become a better rusher last year. He averaged 4.8 yards per carry in his last 10 games. I remember T. Higgins saying he got better every single week. And I think the offensive line started to finally get better. It's been basically horrible for the entire Joe Burrow era, if not earlier than that. I think it's finally starting to be okay. So that's why I'm going Chase Brown. But you win this one, Heath. The people like Drake London.
There we go. I'm going to go 1-4. It's better than 0-5.
Forgot to do the... All right, so on to round 3. Tyler Shuck, one spot ahead of Bo Nix. I'm actually curious. Let's see what the people are saying about this one. It's Bo Nix. I thought they would go with Tyler Shough. I feel like people were sick of Bo Nix even after just 2 years. But Bo Nix, 67% of the vote. Tyler Shough, 33% of the vote right now. Not a lot of votes, by the way. I just put these up about a half hour ago. But you have Tyler Shough one spot ahead of Bo Nix. And I just feel like maybe Bo Nix doesn't get the credit he deserves. In 2 years, he's been the number 9 quarterback per game and number 13 per game in 6-point leagues, number 8 and number 11 per game in 4-point leagues. And it doesn't even seem like he had that good of a year last year, and he was still right around QB 12, and they just added Jalen Waddle. So, yeah, I why is Shough one spot ahead of Nix?
I think this is more just disenchantment with Nix for me. I think it's really bad to lead the NFL in pass attempts and have 5 rushing touchdowns and still not be a top 12 quarterback.
13th, but you're right.
But still, like, even if he was 12th,
yeah,
you know, yeah, that should be a top 5 guy.
Yeah,
I think it's really bad to throw 612 times and not reach 4,000 yards passing or 30 touchdowns.
He did do it. Yeah, he did accomplish this in, as a rookie, though. He did finish.
He did not reach 4,000 yards or 30 touchdown passes.
No, but he finished top 10. And that's he did true. That without leading the NFL in passing. I was very worried. I didn't draft any Bo Nix. I remember his ADP last year. It was like he was sort of in a tier of his own, I feel. And I just said, like, I'm not drafting any Bo Nix because there are 5 guys behind him that I like just as much, if not more. And I just kind of felt like he was going to regress because I didn't think he was that good. But that's sort of how I'm feeling about Tyler Shough, honestly. Like, I don't really understand how Shough did what he did last year.
I think Nix did regress.
Yeah.
And like, but, and it was kind of masked a little bit by, I mean, they had a great team. They won a bunch of games and he led the NFL in passing yards, not yards, attempts. Yeah. And so like, he still was not miserable in terms of fantasy. I think I just have more hope that Tyler Shough might be good. I think most likely you don't want to start either one of these guys. That's why neither one of them is a top 12 quarterback for me. But like Shough, it at least was a rookie last year, looked good in the second half, also got a major addition in Jordan Tyson.
Yeah.
And I think that I have some hope that he takes a step forward. Whereas I'm mostly just thinking, man, last year was probably like the best possible scenario for Bo Nix.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, that might be, except they did add Waddle. One thing that Bo Nix has been absolutely terrible at is deep balls. And usually I say deep balls are 20 or more air yards. He's not that bad at that. But if you look at 30 or more air yards, he's awful. And not only that, he's been first or second in those pass attempts of 30 or more air yards each of the last 2 years. So I would like for Bo Nix to stop doing that because he stinks at it, unless Jalen Waddle is finally going to be the piece of the puzzle, because we know Bo Nix can throw short. He does that a lot, but he needs to be a better downfield passer. I think it's like, I guess the argument I would have for Nix is that he had a pretty disappointing year last year and still was the number 13 quarterback per game. He's got that rushing upside, you know, 356 yards and 5 rushing touchdowns. But what's actually interesting is that's pretty much the same as what Tyler Shough was on pace for.
Right.
As a starter. That's wild. I did not expect Shough and Nix to have the same rushing stats. Statistically, Shough kills him based on last year. But I don't know. I guess it's a little bit of faith in Sean Payton, faith in what could be the best offensive line in football, and the addition of Jalen Waddle.
I think the offensive line part is a good point and could elevate Nix. And again, I'm, as you can see here, if you're watching on the graphic, I'm the high guy on both of these guys. So I don't think I dislike Bo Nix. The situation is still fantastic for him. I have more hope that Shough might actually be kind of good.
Yeah, and I got to say, I mean, if Bo Nix loses his rushing ability, then you're in trouble, and he's coming off ankle surgery.
I didn't even bring that up. That would have been the kill shot.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a major ankle surgery or something, but it is ankle surgery. It happened in the AFC divisional round. Okay. And I think for you, this is like a vote of not that much confidence in Nix. And I think for me, it's a vote of not that much confidence in Shough. I mean, yeah. It was a 26-year-old rookie who completed 63% of his passes in college. And he goes out and completes 67% of his passes with a high ADOT last year. I don't understand. I mean, maybe that's just Kellen Moore being great, but that's really, I was quite surprised.
Well, that's the other thing. As you said, you had confidence in Sean Payton. I think I have probably, for fantasy purposes at this stage, more confidence in Kellen Moore.
Okay. All right, this one I think I'm most adamant about. Okay, this one I think you're crazy. To have Jared Goff three spots ahead of Caleb Williams in your quarterback rankings. You want to go first? Oh, wait, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, they basically were tied last year in fantasy points. Caleb a little bit better in 4-point, Goff a little bit better in 6-point. By the way, these are 6-point per passing touchdown.
Man, right? Everybody hates Jared Goff.
No, I love Jared Goff.
No, I was looking at Dave and Jamie's rankings. Oh. Wow. He's going to have the worst year he had in Detroit.
Yeah, they have him 17th and 18th. You have him 10th. You have Caleb Williams 13th. Jamie has Caleb 11th and Dave has him 9th. Goff has been super consistent. Like I said, at the water cooler, he leads the NFL in passing yards over the last 4 years. He leads the NFL in passing touchdowns over the last 4 years, but he's 9th in fantasy points per game. He hasn't finished higher than 8th per game. And, you know, he has 2 rushing touchdowns in 5 years with the Detroit Lions. So it's basically just, I feel like Jared Goff hit his upside 2 years ago, and that was QB 8 per game. Caleb Williams has not hit his upside yet. He's going to rush for 300 or more yards than Jared Goff. He's going to rush for more touchdowns. He's not going to have the gaudy passing numbers, but maybe he can be somewhat in the ballpark. They're going to run a ton of plays. Ben Johnson's offenses always do. This is kind of a layup for me to take Caleb over Goff, because I think he has clearly more upside.
These last two that you save for the end are probably the ones where I'm most likely to be convinced that the ranking is wrong. I think what maybe I've gotten too caught up in with the Goff and Williams debate is Goff is such a better NFL quarterback than Caleb Williams right now. It bothers me that, I don't know, is the perception that Caleb Williams like took a big step forward in his first year with?
Yeah. I'll tell you where before you say, let me tell you where he did the best. He went from, there's a stat, sacks per pressure.
Okay.
So how many times are you sacked when you're pressured? He went from second worst to second best. So he improved there. Just not getting sacked is huge. The offense went from one of the lowest play action rates to one of the highest, went a lot more motion. I think you could see the results on the field, some of the plays he made. But I understand, his completion percentage was dreadful.
And it wasn't like each of the last 2 years, 1/5 of his throws have been off target or bad.
Yeah, he had the worst off target rate in the NFL.
His on target percentage of throws actually went down last year. And then with the way the Bears kind of managed the second half of the season, and just like, we're going to give the ball to DeAndre Swift and Kyle Monongai 35 times a game, I hope that doesn't say something about Ben Johnson's satisfaction with Caleb Williams' accuracy.
Well, the thing is, Ben Johnson, Ben Johnson, whether it's been with the Lions or the, hold on, I'll tell you. So he's been a coordinator or head coach 4 years now. Mm-hmm. 3 years with the Lions, 1 year with the Bears. This is where they've ranked in pass rate. 19th, 22nd, 26th, and 27th. They were 27th in pass rate last year. But this is where they ranked in pass attempts. 11th, 9th, 16th, right, and 10th. Because they're always running a ton of plays. Top 2 in plays 3 straight years for Ben Johnson's offenses. So I was a concern of mine initially. I'm going, they're a really run-heavy team. But there's just this history of, they're also kind of pass heavy because they run so many plays.
No, that's a good point. And that's something I do expect to continue. I think it's more likely that the Bears have more offensive plays than the Lions. And I think that the thing that with this one really got me thinking, maybe I should just change the ranking. It's not going to change in the projections. Goff's going to project for more points. In the chat, somebody said Caleb will just have more variance.
Yeah.
I think that's the perfect way to describe it. And generally speaking, when it comes to first round picks like Amon-Ra St. Brown and Puka Nacua, I'm pretty comfortable choosing the safe guy that I think is going to average 19 fantasy points per game, like still elite, but also safe. When it comes to borderline QB1s, maybe I should probably, as I have in the past, just lean into the upside. I think somebody also made a comment about like Caleb's off schedule tendencies. And I do think there's a little bit of Kyler Murray there that like, I wish he could just make more of the easy plays that Goff makes.
Yeah. He needs to make the layups. I think that's kind of an argument for him though, because Caleb Williams was pretty good last year. Where did he finish overall? He finished QB 10 per game in 6 point, QB 9 per game in 4 point. And he does that without just hitting the layups. If he can start, maybe it's a footwork thing, I don't know, but if he can start just be a little more accurate on easy balls, then, you know, then we could be really talking here. And what was I going to say? I don't even remember. All right, well, that's kind of where I'm at with Caleb and Jared Goff. I just feel like there's more upside. Goff is very safe, though, without question.
He threw for 600 more yards and 7 more touchdowns last year, and they were still tied in fantasy points. I think he might throw for 600 more yards and 7 more touchdowns again. I guess it may come down to whether Caleb gets the 3 rushing touchdowns again.
And the Twitter poll is Caleb Williams with 63% of the vote. I know what I was going to say. So I looked at like 20, I just picked randomly 24 fantasy points per game. Neither of these quarterbacks have, maybe Goff did that 1 year with the Rams, but neither of them have done that anytime recently. Drake May averaged 24 fantasy points per game last year, 6 point per passing touchdown. It's a really good year. Have there been quarterbacks who have done that who basically don't run? And there's only been one in the last 4 years, and it was Matthew Stafford. He's the only guy who hasn't been on pace for at least 200 rushing yards and who scored at least 24 fantasy points per game. It was Stafford in 2025. I think he had like -1 rushing yard or something. But before that, we actually had a lot of guys like that. Now, it was Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers. It's basically all Hall of Famers. But it did used to happen quite a bit. The guys would average 24 fantasy points and barely run the ball. I don't know why it doesn't really happen anymore.
And, like, we're not quite, like, I'm glad you chose 24 and not 23, because Jared Goff did average 23.3 fantasy points per game in 2024.
2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess there aren't that many guys who could have that kind of year, but Goff would be on the short list. All right, let's take a break. And we've got one more for you. Luther Burden versus Josh Allen.
Also, somebody in the chat made a good point. Like, I don't know what your cutoff for rushing was, but Joe Burrow had 200 rushing yards and averaged 27 fantasy points.
Yeah, it was 200. But the thing about Goff is that he's not even close to 200. He's 45-ish yards. 200 just seemed to be... Of the guys that you should expect 24 or more fantasy points from, I would say Burrow is the one who runs the least, and he's usually around 200. I don't know if you expect that from Dak Prescott. He's been there a lot. But his rushing has gone down a lot lately. So I don't know, you know, that's something to think about with Dak. But he used to be over 200. All right, Luther Burden ahead of Josh Allen. As we look at Heath's rankings, Burden is, he is 34th overall. You're actually the high guy on Burden. And Allen is 37th overall. And this is just more of a unproven, the single most proven player in fantasy, basically. Mm-hmm. Against the guy who had 60 targets in his only year in the NFL. So a lot of guys get drafted ahead of Josh Allen based on potential and based on upside. And Josh Allen just is QB1 basically every year. He's been hurt the last 2 years by playing one snap in week 18, and it's made his per game averages look worse, but he's still Josh Allen. So why would you take Luther Burden over him?
So I do think like this is probably dependent on your league, and maybe I've got too much fantasy analyst brain going on here, because we can draft Jared Goff in round 12 and Brock Purdy in round 10, and if the difference between Josh Allen and those guys is 3 points per game, I'd rather take the wide receiver that I think has top 12 upside. Burden did only have 60 targets as a rookie, but obviously DJ Moore left. He averaged 2.07 fantasy points per target last year, which is just about average for a starting wide receiver in Ben Johnson's offense. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Josh Reynolds all had seasons that were better than that in terms of fantasy points per target. And I think there's a real chance. In fact, I project him for right around 120 targets. Well, that's 14 or 15 fantasy points per game, and I don't think that's the upside. If he gets 8 targets per game, he could easily be a top 6 or 7 fantasy wide receiver. There's risk, more risk there with Luther Burden. I don't really think there's much risk if he stays healthy that he's going to be bad, just because there's not really any other wide receivers on this team. There's three guys. It's Burden, it's Adunze, it's Loveland, and we have to figure out how, what the target share is going to be there. But the potential to be the number one wide receiver in a Ben Johnson offense after his incredibly elite efficiency as a rookie on a very small sample size, but we just don't see rookies that are as good as Luther Burden was on a yards per route run basis basically ever. And now he's got the chance to have 120 plus targets.
I'm pretty tempted to take Burden ahead of Allen because I don't know how much you were swayed by it, but I really didn't like what Romo Dunze was saying about his foot.
No, it's not great.
Yeah, I don't think it's a huge deal, but he basically said his foot is never going to be the same.
I'm a little more worried about his hands than his foot.
Well, Burden had some drops too.
Yeah.
That was an issue for him. He also, I think his biggest issue for Burden is that he had like one end zone target. So I could see him kind of being a Zay Flowers type guy who just doesn't score that many touchdowns, but I'm not going to put that on him right now. I think let's see how the career plays out. There's a lot to like about Luther Burden. I hope they play him more. He never had that high of a route participation rate. Is he going to be that kind of player like a Jaden
Reed?
Who
else would they play?
If they view him as, you know, mostly a slot guy that's only going to be out there in three receiver sets, I hope that's not the case. But you're right. With DJ Moore gone, it should free up Burden to play a lot. And Ben Johnson said, I'm buying stock in Luther Burden. I think my point is obvious. It's a big projection for Burden. He didn't play that much last year. He didn't do that much last year. Josh Allen is arguably the safest pick. And I'm hoping that DJ Moore going to the Bills gives Josh Allen that 29 point upside that he doesn't really seem to have in the Joe Brady era in Buffalo.
Right.
But if DJ Moore weren't there, I don't think I would draft any Josh Allen because he's still amazing, but he's not as great as he used to be. He doesn't throw as much. He doesn't run as much. But now that they went out and got him, and I think they realized like our window is closing, right? Like, we got to get a Super Bowl for Josh Allen. Let this guy be Josh Allen. I think that boosts his upside. DJ Moore is not going to be Stephon Diggs, not even close. But I think it's going to push his upside a little bit higher. So I'm going to go with the safety here of Josh Allen. I understand quarterback's really good and you can wait and it's super deep this year. I understand the philosophy of taking some, you know, less proven players over Allen, but I'm not quite there with Burden.
I tell you, like one of the things I do when I'm putting together my top 150 is we talked about value-based drafting and we'll probably do a whole episode on it later this summer as we have in the past. But I kind of look at like when we get to pick 100, which is round 9, what's gone? And there's some ADP you can look at right now that says 14 quarterbacks are going to be gone in the first 8 rounds. If that's the case, then you should probably take Josh Allen here.
Yeah.
In our drafts, it might be 7 that are gone. Right. And so like where your league falls on that spectrum of 7 to 14 quarterbacks gone in the first 8 rounds of drafts really should influence how high you're willing to take Josh Allen. I think in leagues where quarterbacks fly off the board, it's not going to matter because he's going to go in the first or second round, and I still wouldn't do that.
My hope is that the foot issues drop Odunze a round or two, and that's the guy I end up drafting a lot for the Bears. I haven't taken Loveland. I haven't really taken Burden. In fact, Burden versus DJ Moore is a tough call for me.
Kind of sounds like you're fading a Ben Johnson offense.
Yeah, I don't want to do that, but these guys are going really early, you know?
And one of them's going to probably smash and be like, we weren't even drafting him high enough, but Which one?
I really want to take Caleb Williams, but he's, I don't love his ADP. So I don't think he's going to have like an MVP type season. You know, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Bo Nix last year, where I don't think, I think Caleb's going to be really good. I was worried about Bo Nix, his performance, but I think Caleb, you know, his ADP, I think Caleb is in a range. I don't think he's that much better than Brock Purdy and Dak Prescott and Trevor Lawrence and Jared Goff. Probably forgetting some, maybe even Stafford in a 6-point per passion touchdown, but he's going to go considerably earlier than them. So I don't know. I can't sit here and be like, I don't want any of the Bears offense. I just want to find the best value. I'm not sure who that's going to be yet. Right now, I'd say it's Caleb. I'm hope it's probably could end up being Odunze. All right.
Could
well,
be DeAndre Swift.
Oh yeah. You know, I didn't really think about that. Could be Manong guy.
Yeah.
All right. So the Twitter poll there was, we knew it was going to be Josh Allen, 86.6% for Allen. So the one you got the Drake London one.
Yeah.
I guess I did pick some that I feel like I knew I was going to win the public.
That was kind of the point, right?
It was.
But you know, I think, listen, a lot of times we think one thing's going to happen. Halftime last night, all I saw were tweets from experts saying the series is over. I saw people on TV saying the series was over.
You wouldn't have seen that from me.
Everybody thought it was over. And I guess now it's not.
Are you trolling me? I'm not really sure what's happening here.
No, not at all. Yeah. It's been fantastic. What's your level of confidence in the Knicks winning the championship?
57%.
57%.
I think they're pretty even team. I think the Spurs are a little better than the Knicks. I think they, for some reason, they go through these spells where they barely give Wembanyama the ball. They would just give him the ball more, I think. They'd be in better shape.
It's difficult because as soon as he crosses half court, a guy who's 6'11" and weighs 250 pounds grabs a hold of him with both arms and holds on whenever he tries to run. So it's hard.
Excuse me. I think you're talking about the wrong teams here. Because Wembanyama should have been ejected for what he did to Jalen Brunson.
Agreed. But that doesn't change the fact that throughout the entire playoffs, the other team's defensive strategy has just been grab a hold of Wimby with two hands whenever he tries to do anything and don't let him do that.
Well, they called a ton of fouls.
Occasionally, you got to hit a guy in the head to send a message.
That's how I feel about Brunson. They're playing football out there on Jalen Brunson. He's playing basketball. It's ridiculous. He gets fouled almost every single possession. It's really taking – look, their strategy is obviously – what the Pistons tried to do to Michael Jordan back in the day, just beat up Jalen Brunson, and it's working. I think the Spurs are a better team, but not by much. So I'm probably one of those, whoever wins game four wins the series.
I think the Knicks are so infinitely more consistent, and their floor in a given game is so much higher, and a given quarter is so much higher. But the Spurs go 6-minute stretches where they look like the best team that's ever played basketball.
Yeah. Well, the Knicks need to move the ball a little bit more. Too much dribbling last night. Move that ball. Run the offense through Cat. Let Cat. Yeah, you know, Wemby is so interesting because he's the most impactful defensive player. Just being on the court, It's insane how many times the Knicks will drive to the hoop and just not shoot a layup because they know it's going to get rejected. But Also, if you get him one on one on the perimeter, he's awful. I mean, everybody
it's
goes. Different. Right
I think it's
by
hard,
him.
Probably hard to go side to side at that size.
Yeah, they go right by him. All right, well, fun sir. And again, the hockey's been incredible. So I'm going to try to watch game four tonight. I think it's game four. Yeah, it's game.
You're really into this.
Well, I don't even know what happened in game three. Yeah, it's game four. Game three was a double overtime win, and it's amazing. Look at that game three. Look at this. 0-0 after the first period.
Sounds great.
4-0 Golden Knights after the second period. And then Carolina scored 4 in the third period. And then they went to, I thought it was 2 overtimes, maybe it was just 1, and it was 5-4 Golden Knights. That's great stuff. Wish I had seen it. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Football.
Podcasts. Criminal Minds Evolution is back on Paramount Plus.
Do you think it's possible to discern some hidden pattern shared by all serial killers?
With a new killer each week.
I see those wheels turning.
When a copycat killer emerges, the BAU will form a dark alliance with a familiar foe.
Elias, would you help us?
This season, evil is contagious.
Once it starts, it can't be stopped.
Criminal Minds Evolution. New season now streaming on Paramount+.